Yeah, that was a good one. All right, so
hearing up, could you check your mic there real quick, sir?
Mine?
Yeah, huh?
Okay, let me just...
No, I'm hearing you, but you are like kind of much quieter than Barry.
Oh, here, let me turn him up a bit.
Yeah. Manage all the levels. Yeah. And then hopefully...
How's that?
Let me know. Give me a sound check. Is this all right? Is this good? Am I being dragged by the horrible echo of
it? Again, I can hear you and it is clear, but it does sound like you are inside a bucket. So I'll just throw that out. And it sounds like Barry is standing next to my head.
Let me see. So, should be a good place.
It should be.
Yeah.
All right. So what about now? How's that?
You don't see? It's exactly the same. That is very strange. So obviously it's a tech thing.
Well, is it coming through the microphone or are we just hearing him through the computer?
Ah, bingo. No, he nailed it. Mick, you're brilliant. You and your dog, you're brilliant.
Oh, you think he's not on the mic?
Yeah, the mic's off.
Hold on a second. I'm going to hold on, folks. Hey, welcome. Hey, John. Brian, good to see you, man.
Hey,
let me kill the recording. Definitely what we were going for. All right, audio is fixed.
All right, perfect.
Take my my glasses off. Hey, good morning, everybody. Man, good to see Brian. Good to see you, dude. I haven't seen you in a long time. Rock and rolling, man. Yeah, a nice facial. Well, I'm excited. This is the October Masterclass, and Nick, who is in town today, we actually get to do this live, which
I'm excited.
Cool. And we're in full California spirit. We have like a chai tea with oat milk.
Yes, that's right.
Because, you know, we didn't want to do dairy because that would just be wrong here.
No.
And Nick has spent a lot of time in his life playing with video, and he's an obsessively smart man, I must say.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, he knows things. He gets into things. He doesn't mess around. So, you know, if there's a PCU that wants to play with video, wants to dig more into it, as I said in the announcement, kind of how to make a great video with what you have, and then also how to 10X it with some tricks, some equipment hacks, and whatever it is. So,
right. Well, and also making it approachable with whatever skill and equipment that you already have. Like, I mean, we're talking about things that are literally lying around that are just out there. And we'll get into all of that. That's pretty in depth. So there's a lot of information in this one.
Cool. So official introduction, ladies and gentlemen, Nick Fedoroff.
Hey! All right.
And, oh, there is. Wait, we even have this fancy. Oh, wait, I didn't shift back. We got to have our thing here, so we can, you know, do full control of what we're up to here.
Oh, perfect. Great. Yeah. What is it?
Just so you know, you can have an official introduction card.
Hey, that's me, right?
And I will highlight some notes here over on the whiteboard as we get going. So we're good to go.
Great.
Let's dig in, man.
So yeah, essentially we're living in a world where video is the thing that matters. We have screens in our pocket, and we're accustomed to getting information from video rather than from images and rather than from words. It used to be that people would use images on blogs and then writing, but now anything with video plays much, much better. So if you have a blog, the video is going to play better. If you have anything that you're selling, video is going to play better. And especially if you're an entertainer, you know that you get more gigs with a video. So let's actually throw it up to here.
Hey, and do you guys, let me just tell you at home, if you want to watch, I think you can double click on our screen and it'll make it full screen. Or if you're seeing everybody at once, kind of a couple different ways to view this thing. We'll keep it. I think I should probably go on to a full view just to go on replay.
Yeah, why not?
Actually get the full wonder that is. Let's see.
If we can. Can we? Will we?
Yeah. All right.
Suspense builds.
Let me see if I can do this.
We're one of the
yep, there we go.
Perfect. Okay, cool. Now I can see myself. Oh, that's beautiful.
Isn't that horrid?
Yeah. Oh, all right. Take that glare down on
all the glasses. Right. So there you go. There's your screen. Oh, my gosh, dang, again. Well, it's a good thing to have a...
Barry not getting his stuff together.
Hey, man, Zed just pulled my only hair out of my head.
That's true. It's attached to your brain, too.
The impact on that is big.
All right, so that's me. Yeah, my name's Nick Fedoroff and all that stuff. We're going to be getting into making the video as well as producing the video for distribution. And I'm going to walk you through every single step that you're going to need, whether you have no experience with video or are pretty experienced. We're going to get into the pretty nitty-gritty stuff. So why me, though? Well, I grew up with a camera in my hand. I've been both in front of and behind the camera on small and major shoots. And for the last two or so years, I've been contracted as a creative director and music video producer for the Highlander Record Company. Then I've been producing videos on budgets that can be called, let's say, mildly extravagant, as well as completely shoestring. So I'm going to assume that you have little to no background, but really, who has background in video here? Like really?
Who has a camera with a...
That's a
skateboard wheel.
That's
Is that what that is? That's a camera with a skateboard wheel.
So that's a focus puller. It's
Puller.
Right. So that allows you to pull your focus while not maintaining everything. I just shot a video on one of these, and you can see me actually using it right there. So why should you listen to me? Well, because I'm into not so glorious filmmaking. That is essentially what we're going to be talking about. So here's the process of literally almost every video project. But before we get into this, I really do want to hear from you guys. Do you have some background in video? Do you any of you guys that can you like chime in? Just let me know.
Yeah, I'll start off just with shooting videos pretty much my whole life, either myself or working with someone. Mm-hmm. I also have another career as a screenwriter, so I kind of have ideas of basic structure and this and that.
Great. Cool. So then you're going to pretty much know a lot of this stuff. It's going to be very much like how to do it on a hacking this kind of video shooting kind of way, but we're going to get into some really interesting stuff, and I'd love to bounce some chat off of you in particular. So let's go back here. What we're really going to be going through is we're going to start with the idea and the outline, then script and storyboard and what you can do to work around those things. Then your equipment and location, planning and scheduling, execution, you know, all that stuff. What we're really going to focus on is your equipment, your execution, and then your production and distribution. I think that those things are the points that people really, really struggle with. They don't know what cameras, what sound, and what lighting to get, as well as like how do you use your limited equipment with your limited budget and your limited time to get the best product for what you're putting together, as well as like producing it and distributing it. Where are you going to put this stuff? Is it going to be on YouTube? Is it going to be a back of room sales DVD? Yeah. Is it going to be something that you can actually make money from eventually or immediately? And then how to do that.
Yeah,
so
beautiful.
We're going to get right into that. So let's start with just your idea and outline. This stuff is, I'm going to go through the beginning until we get into your equipment. It's just going to be a run through. So really start with just your basic idea, and how I put my outline is I make a timeline of what the project will look like. So pretty much I want to be in the mind of the viewer, and I want to have people people see this in order. So I'm going to start with, okay, here's going to be my intro. It's going to be, we're going to move into this content and on further. And we can see that this is an example of a timeline for a short film that I just started working on that somebody sent me. So it's literally like, here are the plot points in order of what they're going to do.
Right. That's really 20,000, 30,000 foot high in the sky view of just what's happened. This is no detail.
Right. So Okay. Let me put this in perspective, because people skip over this all the time, and it is the most important thing. I just had a friend talk to me about her movie. She's been making this movie for 3 years, and she has gone through so many different iterations of script because they never had an outline. They've been writing the script and simultaneously making the movie. And for something like a mockumentary, like that's what she's doing, is a mockumentary, sort of like Spinal Tap. It can work, but they've wasted so much production time simply getting the idea solid. When if you just sit down, really flesh it out, and if one or two things changes or you need to reorder something, that's fine. But anyway,
it's expensive too.
It's so expensive. Murder. It's completely just, if you don't get it right away, it's just going to waste all your time. So scripting, this is what like an official script will look like in scripting form. Do you need to learn how to write in scripting? Well, if you're a screenwriter, yeah, absolutely you do, because you're going to be showing it to other people and they need to be able to know what's going on. So we start interior college classroom day. Cool. Then we have this sort of direction and then the dialogue. You don't need that. This is what one of my scripts looks like. This is actually clipped from a script that I am going to shoot in three days. And it's a piece on misdirection and how it works. So you see it starts park. You see misdirection sounds like, oh, look, a three-headed monkey. It doesn't work, does it? Okay, all that stuff. And then I have my camera direction in red and my ideas in red. This is just for me, just for my notes. So if you're using this script for bouncing ideas off of somebody, you need to make sure that whatever you're putting in it, you're able to have a discussion about with who you're sharing it with. If they don't understand what your notes are, if they don't understand what specific things look like that mean something, or they're misinterpreting your script, you have problems. But that's all that you need to do is make sure that people have the right idea, and a storyboard can really help with that.
Let me just put in one point here. I looked through Nick's slide deck earlier, and we're talking a lot about sort of big picture stuff about taking an idea, a project from zero to end. And there's pieces in here that will affect directly us as entertainers. You know, this masterclasses are, to me, they were just always this idea that we all came together with this idea of we do magic, we do juggling, we're performers. But then everybody has some other big skill. So I'm so happy to share this, but I just wanted to note that at some point in this, we're going into also what entertainers can do as far as backroom sales, putting that together. So this is a bit of laying the runway for that. So
absolutely. I just want to let people know. We're starting from ground zero. I mean, this is really, really basic stuff. But like, I don't know who's going to be watching this live or on the replay and where your skills are going to be at. But we're going to get into some pretty heavy lifting stuff. But right now, we're going to talk about storyboarding. This is what a storyboard is. Blank storyboard. Mm-hmm. You put the picture there of what it's supposed to look like and then all that stuff. And storyboards can be beautiful, really well-drawn stuff where you can follow the action. It's pretty much like you're matching frame for frame. Or it can be rough. Or
those are my storyboards, yeah.
Yeah, well, these are my storyboards here, so.
Oh, I don't know, man.
You're still way ahead of me.
It might be Mark. I can show you something Mark made when we go back upstairs.
So yeah, it's
I doubt yours look like that, man.
But that's the thing, is like your storyboard is for essentially who's ever running your camera. For me, I run a lot of my own camera stuff. I set it up. Right now, I just started working with somebody who's a great cinematographer who's willing to just sort of like hold a camera and do some stuff in exchange for learning some other skills. But that's what it is. And trading this stuff for friends, finding people who either want to learn or already have the skills, it cuts down so much of the work and talent, especially if you're trading friends' favors. But this stuff is, you know, yeah, your storyboards aren't necessary. A lot of times I don't recommend doing a storyboard, only if it's a project that really you need to communicate an idea clearly visually. Most of this stuff you don't have to. So we're going to talk about equipment and location, but mainly we're going to be talking about equipment. Really, you have four pieces of equipment. You have your camera, your sound equipment, your lighting, and your set. And I count your set in your equipment. Most people don't, but I view it as it's the thing that you need to get the job done. So it should be counted with as much weight as your camera, as much weight as your sound and your lighting. Which a lot of people just kind of go, oh yeah, well, we're shooting wherever we're shooting. No, very, very important. So let's talk about this. Now this is, I want you to notice the wording here very, very carefully. This is above minimal camera requirements. We're going to get into what you can do, absolute minimal. But this is, if you have the choice, these are sort of the minimal things that you need. You need 1080p. And the reason you need 1080p is not because you're going to be publishing in 1080p. If you publish in 720, scaled down just a little bit, you're going to be able to crop in case something is not perfect. So if you're shooting in 4K, you don't need to publish in 4K. You can scale it down to 1080 and have it look beautiful, which means that every 16 pixels is going to end up being one pixel, which just makes everything beautiful. And we'll get into noise reduction a little bit later. Then you need a camera with sound input. And this is optional. You can use a Tascam or something else to capture the sound. Yeah, we're using a Tascam right now. Mm-hmm. But it's really useful to be able to just run and gun directly input into your camera. Like even if you're shooting on your we'll get to that in a second.
Yeah.
You need manual mode on that, which means that you have to be able to control exposure. You have to be able to control ISO and you have to be able to control your shutter speed. If you can't control those three things, then your camera is really limping by on an auto mode, which allows you in certain situations, most situations you'll be fine. But in certain situations where you need control, where you need to actually show somebody something, you're not going to be able to do that. And there are apps on phones that'll allow you to unlock auto modes if they don't have it in your, Yeah, that's one of the things. If you have, back when I had an iPhone 5, there was a program called Filmic Pro, and it was like $15, and you could do exposure separate, pull focus separately. It was great. It was perfect. But that's something else. And then you need to either have an optical zoom on like a camcorder or a switchable lens camera, like on a DSLR or a mirrorless camera. And then this doesn't rule out your phones. A lot of people think, oh, well, if I can't switch lenses or I need an optical zoom, then my phone's out. Wrong. You can switch lenses on your phone. It's really cool. And we're going to show you that. so these are a couple of just like, okay, you don't know what to buy. I recommend these as just like really, really.
This Vixia is basically what I have two of right here.
Yeah, and they're great. They're great cameras. Gosh, they're great little run and gun camcorders, which are fantastic. The Vixia has an input for sound. The Handycam doesn't.
This one does. Yeah.
Right. I recommend the Vixia over the Handycam. However, I have a Handycam, and oh my God, it is so good for managing like in low light situations. A lot of people like entertainers are struggling with getting good live footage. And the reason for that is the bright lights are going to make your highlights so bright that you're going to lose that data. We're going to get into camera sensors later on and how those actually work with like light levels and how you can manage that. But what I find is the Sony will absorb more light and be able to maintain its color data before it loses it. And then the Vixia is just so much easier to use. So that's that. And then here's the DSLR. I use this for a lot of my my projects. This is the T6i. It's a little bit more expensive, but it allows you so much more versatility in some of the stuff. And also with Canon's mounts, you can use some of the best lenses on the market. Yep. Fantastic stuff. And then here's your minimal equipment. Anything digital that works.
Great.
If you have a digital camera.
That last part, that works.
Yeah, that works. Yeah. But if you're shooting like something that has, it shoots onto VHS tapes, click. Like, you don't want to do that.
Right.
But if it has an SD card slot,
we're good.
Go for it.
Really?
Like,
okay.
Really. If it like, honestly, I shot on a Canon GL2 the other day. And it shoots on an SD card slot. It's 540 lines.
Yeah.
So there's 540. It's not 1080 by 7 or whatever. It's so much below that. But it used to be broadcast quality. So now we have these options that, okay, great. It can shoot digital. If you don't have access to something else, just use what you got. If you have a phone in your pocket and you don't want to buy another camera, that phone is what you're going to be operating on. And there are ways to make that footage or trick people into thinking that footage looks as professional as it can be.
So do you think what people sit and see, the story, you know, the earlier looking at the storyboarding, that's king. Mm.
The storyboarding or like what people see.
Just absolutely. What they see. I mean, you're sitting here saying anything digital that works, if the story's good enough to
your
carry.
Your content, whatever it is that you're like, people get by on the worst kinds of cameras because their content rocks.
Blair Witch Project.
Exactly.
Right?
And that's the thing is look at what was the one that just came out like 6 years ago? Paranormal Activity. Hmm. That was shot essentially on security cameras. And there's another one called Look where it was shot on security cameras.
But the story's still good.
The story was amazing.
Yeah. Great point.
And that's one of those things where if your content is great, then none of this really, like, you don't need a fancy camera unless you're trying to do something specifically visual. But you do need to be able to control your exposure, which means that you need to be able to control your ISO, you need to be able to control your shutter speed, and you need to be able to control your aperture. So that being said, whatever you have, that is what's going to work. So let's move on to sound. This is your above minimal sound requirements. You need a mic that fits your situation and a thing to capture sound. That's it. Like literally, it is, if you, you just need a mic and a thing to record into. If you have a mic and nothing to record into, you're out of luck. But if you have just
a thing to capture though, and mic.
So this is the thing that I'm going to show you. Is
you
can get cheap mics. This is a $25 lavalier. It is great. Oh, wow. It's directional. It's very, very similar to what we have. And right there, I have a picture of it being plugged into a thing that's called a Zoom H4.
Right here. I got it. Here. Kick on the, there's this.
What are you talking about, Barry?
This is my Zoom.
I have mine.
You have a newer one, right?
No, this is an older one. This is actually like missing its battery pack.
Oh, this is an H2.
Yeah. No. Oh, this is a newer one then. Yeah, this is the H4. I have an H6 at home, but it's, you don't need that stuff. If it's meant to capture audio, it will be good. But let's say you don't want to spend $150 on one of these. Well, you can plug your lavalier directly into your smartphone, even if you're not recording off of it. If you want to capture very good quality sound, you can just plug any mic directly into your phone and hit record, and it'll capture sound for you. You can just mesh it together later. It's going to be fantastic. It's going to be a lot better than plugging it directly into your camera if your camera is a lower quality.
Now, at that point, though, you have to deal with syncing sound. And
you do, and we're going to get to that point.
Is that cable taped together? Did you... take that up?
Maybe. Yeah, perhaps.
Maybe.
But this is the thing is like, if you are filming on your phone, plug it into your phone. If you are filming on another camera that has an audio jack, plug it into the audio jack. It'll make your post-production so much smoother and easier. It matters less that you get the quality perfect. What matters is that you get the project done. Post is where projects go to die. So any sort of post-production that you're doing is just going to get you further away from your goal of publishing. And that's the thing is, like, don't let perfect be your enemy.
Yeah.
And it's not even don't let perfect be your enemy. Just take all the pieces that don't need to be there out. If you think, oh, I need this and I need that. No, you don't. Figure a way that you don't need this. Waste your time doing something.
Well, it's really funny you say about where good projects go to die. I literally built this studio under my house because I could not deal with any more post-production.
Right.
You know, even if my things aren't perfect, I'm going to get this little board where I can switch between three cameras, lower thirds, there's Nick, and computer, and just do stuff live.
Absolutely.
Even if it's not as good, I can put out one a day.
Right.
Yeah.
And I walk in, I mean, this is really fantastic. Like, talk about a studio that actually has, like, we're using essentially 2+ point lighting because we don't have a key.
I have a hair light installed up here.
Oh, really?
With no hair.
Oh, what do you know?
With no hair. It's literally, I should just put it on you.
Yeah, that's fine.
With no hair.
So yeah, we have 3-point lighting set up. It's just
it's a giant reflection point up here. It's terrible.
Yeah, but that's the thing is like, if whatever it is that you have, use it. And if you don't have an external mic, just use your in-camera or your phone sound capture. The thing that's interesting though is, when you're using in-camera sound capturing, you have to manage your environment a lot better. So with every single time that I'm going to mention a minimal production requirement, like, okay, great, use whatever camera you need. You have to manage everything else a little bit more tightly. Like, there's not a lot of leeway. Like, if you're shooting in 4K, you don't have to frame properly because you can always scale down and make sure that that image is tighter and more stabilized. But if you're shooting in 720 and you're going to publish in 720, you need to make sure your framing is perfect. Otherwise, you're going to scale down and lose data, which is a major problem. But so right now, like I said, you're in camera and your sound phone, whatever the sound capture that you have there, just use it. And then now this, we're going to talk about lighting. So lighting, this is your above minimal. Again, gels, which we're going to talk about separately. And then 3-point lighting setup, like we have here. What I recommend is using LED work lights from just Home Depot or something. They're like $20 a piece.
Yeah.
They are awesome because the light is really, really balanced. And then we'll talk about how, right there. So right. These are.
Yeah, I have a couple of these mounted up in the rack up here when I'm doing different projects.
Yeah, or whatever lighting you have around. Like if you have just a house light that's bright,
yep.
Just put it close to you. Put it in the set. Put it like if Barry and I needed light and we didn't have these lights around in the studio, having a desk lamp here that would end up lighting us and using it as a prop is not something that I wouldn't do. I would completely use that. Just because you can set around your lighting and light around your set.
MacGyver like video, man.
Exactly. And that's what we're talking
MacGyver
about.
MacGyver video, yeah.
So if you don't have any lighting, you can always use natural light. This is something that I feel like is completely underutilized. People forget that there's this giant, amazing light in the sky called the sun. And it is more powerful than anything you could plug into the wall. And we're going to talk about how to treat that light so that it ends up looking really beautiful, because it ends up looking really harsh.
Yeah.
If you just stand out in the sun and point a camera at yourself, you're going to get it. Yeah.
And also, modeled where you're part in the shade and part in the light. It just freaks cameras out. They don't know what to do.
No, they don't. It's too bright behind them. They don't know how to focus and exposure. Yeah. It's just all messed up. So now we're going to talk about sets. Sets are pretty easy. You get a room with art, a room divider, a blank wall, whatever you want behind you. But there's a couple of rules about this. If you're doing something like this where your set looks really nice behind you, you can set that up and you have complete control.
Yeah.
If you don't have control over a set, if you're in an environment where you can't put whatever it is that's your backdrop as far behind you as you can, because what that's going to do is it's going to put it out of focus.
Yep.
And it will look better.
It's beautiful, right?
Why? Through the eye, whatever's behind your subject that's out of focus, people are used to seeing that in higher quality productions. So they'll psychologically say to themselves, oh, this is a high quality production because the background is out of focus.
And it pop. Pop if that's out of focus.
Yeah.
We just pop out of the screen.
And it does look better. It objectively, in my opinion, looks a lot better if you can't manage your background. So then get a chair, a table if you want to, any props you need and any people you need. And the reason I say any props you need is because really, I'm a magician. Like I don't know about you, but I have more props than I know what to do with. I actually just made a video series getting rid of all the props that I don't. I did. Yeah. It's coming out on YouTube soon.
But, oh my gosh. That sounds
fun. Yeah. It's
you got a lot of props.
Oh my God. It's ridiculous.
I've seen your load.
But it's, so that's one of the things.
You know, Brian Glow, but
I have heard.
Yeah. He's a friend of ours here, and he talks about a warehouse with more than you could imagine.
Right. But that's the thing is like, if you're shooting something, make sure that you have your props and your props and people. Like if you were trying to do this and I wasn't here, like, I mean, if I was somewhere else, that'd be fine if I had access to a computer. But if you're like, and we're going to have Nick Fedoroff doing this somewhere.
Yep. He's lost. Yeah.
Great. Make sure that you have the people there. And that's scheduling, which we will get into.
This is great.
So then any equipment so this is the minimal is just you in a location. So just get there, put your camera there, you're done. So, and I say large location, again, because you really do want to have that background as far away from you as possible if you're using a lower quality camera that you don't have manual controls over, or that you can't get your f-stop down low enough to get your depth of field tight.
Yeah, ideally,
and about that.
I would love the studio to be like another 10 feet deep.
Yeah.
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
And, it's did what I could. Yeah,
that's the thing. I'm pretty glad because my studio is in a single pull-in car garage space.
Oh, wow.
With a back end, so I have a long, narrow studio,
which is great.
It works really well for me.
Fine, yeah.
But so anyway,
this is great,
wrong button.
Hey, I love what you're doing too, Nick. I'll just say about minimal and then above minimal. You know, it's great.
Oh yeah,
we're getting to show people.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, I really find that people get so caught up in like I have to do either the minimum or I have to do like professional level. And I'm like, no, you sweet spot in between, but where's the sweet spot? And so many people give different advice about what cameras to get, sound, things. Really? Here are your requirements for what you need. And that's it. And then play around with everything else. Really, equipment that works is better than equipment that you don't have. So so this is equipment and any large location. That's originally why I said it's equipment and location. And again, this is what you absolutely need. You need a digital camera with sound, access to your location and set, and natural light. That's it.
Absolutely.
You literally need it to be daytime and to have a camera. Do you have that? Do you have that in your pocket right now? I think so.
Yeah.
So we're going to get into actually how to use this stuff. So scheduling, I'm not going to get into scheduling. Like I said, we're only going to really get into three things. You tell people where to be and when to be there. You get everything set up beforehand. Oh my, get everything set up beforehand. I cannot tell you how many times I have showed up to a set and they are still setting things up right up until I either have to be on camera or I have to be shooting.
We've all done that as entertainers. It's a nightmare.
Production gets hectic. It gets crazy. You're out of state. Imagine going to a theater and literally doing a sound test. Oh, wait, we've all done this. Yeah, we're doing a sound test and there's an audience seated.
You guys have this? I mean, and you probably have this. And this is a curse of knowing things, knowing how mics work and how video things. I am the worst, and I can still remember two or three times in my life where I had to switch within about a minute's time from being tech guy to Raspini guy.
Absolutely, yeah.
I hate it. 100%. My brain, and yeah. I never make that transition well.
It's not good. I remember having to, this happened recently, actually, on the last tour that I did. Last show, we were in Sebastopol at the Center for the Arts. They had just switched half of their staff. Half of their staff got fired and rehired. Mm-hmm. So they're dealing with completely new people. And the guy who's doing the sound is also doing the door, is also doing the lighting, is also the guy that I booked with.
And the blessing there would have been if you didn't know shit about sound. And you're right. Like, sorry, can't help. But you do.
Right.
So
right.
You have to become that guy.
No, so this is what happened is we're doing the sound test. He blows one of the speakers. So I have to immediately go in and find out either how I can salvage it or how to unplug it. And we ended up just like, okay, we're going to turn the level down. But I had to dig underneath the cabinet about 30 minutes before doors open. And it's not a good state to be in.
See, this is one of the many times in my life that I've appreciated Dan, my partner.
Oh, yeah.
Who knows nothing about it. He goes, well, and I wish I could be that, but I can't. I have to go rebuild the speaker. You know, so it's terrible.
Yeah.
It's a curse and a blessing.
So that's the thing. Get everything set up beforehand, way beforehand. And then direct everybody what to do. Ahead of time. I can't tell you, just having people go through what they need to do, when they need to do it, too late. Have it beforehand, have it all set up, have little cue cards that you can just hand every single person that you're working with and then just be done. And this is if you're working with multiple people. If you're doing, let's say, a DVD on juggling, on how to write stand-up comedy, on how to do specific magic tricks or whatever it is, and you're selling that back of room or you're selling it at a lecture that you're doing for other people, whatever it is, that production, you're probably going to need more than yourself and a camera. If you're going to sell that, you don't need to. And we're going to get into how to work around that. Yeah. If you're going to be working with people, you need to know how to work with people, at least the basics. So how's everybody doing so far with this?
Like, anyone chime in?
Yeah. Good. I see thumbs up. That's awesome. What's up? I heard a sound.
For me, this is really reaffirming because I have the Sony Handycam. I have the one with the plug-in microphone. And
oh, that's great.
I remember my LED lights from Home Depot. And so I'm like right there with you guys. So.
And LED is great because it's a really nice color tone too. And we're going to get into color tone shifting. But it's just when I first discovered these, I was like, oh, this is fantastic because you can buy pretty much the same light, same amount of lumens and the same color with the same power consumption for about four or five times as much online if you get the camera lights. It's the same bulb. It's the same.
Amazon has some, like, I bought a softbox lighting kit, and I think the whole thing is with the stands and the lights and the boxes and all of them. I think it was like $129. So it wasn't a lot of money.
It's great.
Workable. And then to back that up to like the background, I just used the Home Depot lights, the LED lights.
Yeah.
And hooking those up on the stands. That's right now I have sort of two lighting kits. I have my run and gun lighting kit and my more professional lighting kit. And that the running gun is literally just those LED work lights hooked up to like really cheap stands that pack down to nothing that I can just wrap something around and throw on my back.
I do the you know, I do like YouTube videos where I'm just, you know, speaking almost like the Apple commercials. I'm just standing in a room with a white background.
Yeah. And then you overexpose the white background so that it looks perfect. And we, like, literally, that's a trick in and of itself.
That was like the
biggest thing. Yeah. That's great.
Learning how to do that was like such a big thing for me, is to change the exposure to, you know, like blur that background and make it nice and bright.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's one of those things, is the more light you get to blow, that's honestly, to do that with a really high quality camera is harder than to do it with a lower quality camera, because the lower quality camera will clip sooner. So you need less light to blow out your background,
I also learned a technique to do that with your iPhone. Like you turn the lights off and then you focus in on what you want to focus in and lock it and then turn the lights on.
Oh yeah.
Same thing. So
yeah, that's great. I haven't used that on my phone yet.
No.
I might want to try that. So cool. Okay. Well, now we're getting into the fun part, because we are Barry.
Oh, I'm sorry. I left the wrong program.
When buttons do nothing.
Dang. Good title.
All right. You're driving again.
All right, cool. So, great. So now that we've directed everybody, you execute the shoot. That's what we're going to talk about next. And then you pack up and leave. And by pack up and leave, I mean pack up things nicely and leave. And I swear, I've seen so many people just throw things in the back of their truck and be like, oh, we'll handle it later. And then I see them at the next shoot and it hasn't been touched.
That's when later is.
Yeah, that's when later is. Oh, now we have to deal with it. So let's talk about executing. So we're going to talk about executing your set, then executing your lighting, your sound, your camera, and then we're going to talk super secret tips and tricks. Ooh, this is fun. So this is executing your set. This is where we can really get into the nitty-gritty. So again, you set yourself as far as you can from your background, unless your background is awesome. And then it doesn't matter what's out of frame. I'm going to talk about that more. And then have something visually interesting in the shot. This is visually interesting. If we are boring you, you can always look back there. Your eyes won't be tired. There's intricacy in the background that you just don't know. Barry's shirt is great. Like, it's colorful. It's entertaining, and it's different from the background. So, unlike my blackness and the shirt. So then we're going to talk about lighting. You need standard 3-point lighting. Standard 3-point lighting.
You have a picture of that later, right?
I have a picture of that right now.
Yeah, I think I saw that.
But actually, let's go back to this for a second.
Sure.
When I say it doesn't matter what's out of frame, right now, Barry's got lights over here. He's got lights behind the camera. We've got a whiteboard over there. Like, it doesn't look great below the camera line. But what's in the camera line is beautiful. It's perfectly set up. Like, you can see, sure, we have these things right there and all that stuff, but I think this studio looks great from a studio perspective, but as far as what you're presenting on camera,
that's all that matters.
That's all that matters. And I'm going to show you some photos in a second of really that is all that matters.
Oh, you know what? You talk about that in a minute. Yeah. I'm going to have this live. This will be great.
Oh, cool.
We'll do a little behind the scenes.
Oh yeah. You're going to actually turn the camera or something?
Oh yeah, I could do that. Actually,
sure. Let's take a tour.
That would be a great idea.
Hit that second button real quick.
Okay. This one?
Is that the one?
Yeah.
Is that the one on the whiteboard?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So here's one light.
All right. So let me actually like sort of get you up.
You can
point it over here. That'd be pretty fantastic. So like we have these lights that, no, they don't look pretty. If you put them on set, that's fine. There's literally, show them this, like Barry. Like there's cardboard taped up in the window.
Isn't that nice?
To prevent the light. It doesn't matter what's off.
I'm still filming. I haven't found shades I like yet.
Right, exactly.
I don't want any.
And that's the thing. Is like,
I don't want nasty ones, but I also don't mind that.
Right.
So there's an aesthetic.
Compared to this, this is really, really curated. It's sort of beautiful, but to see what's behind the curtain.
The rest of the, one more time.
Doesn't really matter. This one? Oh, wait, two.
Right. Yeah. There's the second light. You
see those soft boxes around those lights?
There's one right over me.
Yeah.
Third soft box.
And then there's the curtain behind there. And there's like, show them the audio setup too.
There's camera one.
Like in the computer, and that's sort of where our button cheat sheet is. It's great. And then do the infinite effect with the TV.
Oh yes.
Yeah. Look at that. Oh yeah. Picture in picture. In picture. Right. In picture.
And then, so yeah. Enough of whipping back behind my curtain.
Yeah. No, well, I'll go back here.
You mad, man.
Forgetting what the buttons do. Yeah, I know, right? So now we're going to talk about executing lighting. So standard three-point lighting works more wonders than I have heard people give it credit for. Sure, everybody mentions it, but they always mention it as like, yeah, use three-point lighting unless you want to do something creative. No, three-point lighting is amazing. It really is amazing. And then we're going to talk about how to bounce, hide, diffuse, and gel every single light that you are using, and then how to use what you already have. So this is basic three-point lighting. You want two lights that cover each side of the person's face. Put your camera in between them, and then light the back of you. Now, we're not lighting the back of you, but you can see this is what three-point lighting does. If we were to shade one of these lights, you would see the shadow cast on my face actively. And if that were to happen, you would get high contrast. For informational videos, you don't want high contrast. High contrast is for more artistic stuff. Mm. It's when you're really trying to make an emotional point, whether it's happy, sad, or really intense. But for delivering information, you don't necessarily want high contrast. So you want to really cut shadow. You'll notice even in the back, you see there's minimal shadow behind the pins, behind everything on the shelf, because we're using this type of lighting. And also we're using diffused lighting, which we're going to get into right here. So whether you should gel, diffuse, and bounce your lighting. So these are gels. You can buy gels on Amazon for $10. $10.
Or every theater you work at has a whole stack of them back there if you just, no, I'm kidding.
Yeah, it's true. If you just want to, you know, take a couple of those.
We had this great Raspini story. We had a tray that we used in our show.
Yeah.
And we moved that tray from, like we would always take one from the hotel we were at and drop it at the next one and take one.
So oh, that's great. We always there's traveling trays.
We had a rotating tray from our show that always moved.
So, well, let's say, what if you...
$10 for those?
Yes. $10 for these, and one of these gels is enough to gel three work lights.
Right.
But what if you don't want to buy gels? What if you really just want to do this?
Tissue paper.
Super, no, even better. We actually have, why not just use a CD case that you have lying around?
Oh, is that right?
That's right, yeah.
Just on a little
just CD. Put a little CD case. I recommend using either orange or blue. If you're using straight up red, it's going to make you look like you're in a Dracula movie. But orange will match most skin tones, and blue will cool the environment. So if you have darker skin tones, I'd recommend using blue. If you have lighter skin tones, I'd recommend using orange. It'll make you look more alive in either of those situations. But CD case, like people think, oh, I don't want to buy equipment. Really? You already have everything that you need. And yeah. So Okay. You've gelled your lights. Now we're going to diffuse your lights. All right. So how do you diffuse them? Well, first, what does diffusing do? Well, it takes this high contrast photo that was taken with direct side light. This is actually sunlight. And then they put it through a diffuser.
I believe this is before she got into meth and then after.
Right, right. So, but that's the thing. It really does.
You, it gives an impression.
It gives that impression. And it you can see that, which one to you looks like a better photo?
Yeah.
To me, obviously, it's the one on the right. Yeah. So how do you do this? Well, you take the light particles and you shine, or light particles, Jesus. You take the light and you shine it through something that redirects the particle or the waves. I don't know why I want to say particles.
I was laughing about what was happening off camera.
Oh yeah, I know, right? Yeah. We're not gonna get into that right now. So and then you see how it cuts the shadows on there by making the light appear like it's coming from multiple directions. So how do you do this?
Well, normally, hey, leave that one on for a second.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know if everyone got that, but I didn't. So the light's straight on. We get that big shadow behind.
Yeah.
And what are you saying here? You stick that gel in the.
Yeah. So when you have a single light, it'll directly come from that one point. But if you have, let's say, a diffusion layer, this light will hit every point on that diffusion layer, and then the light will begin to come from every direction of that diffusion layer, so you'll get this wider space of light traveling rather than this single point, which will cause really harsh shadows. So that's sort of how that'll work. And you can see what it does on the apples.
And it's interesting too, when you have diffuse lighting, you have two more apples. Mm-hmm. So that's amazing.
Yeah, you can see it turns 4 to 6. It's right. Beautiful. So this is usually what they say. This is what we're using in here, softbox. Really fantastic stuff. They work beautifully.
Yeah.
You know what else works beautifully?
No, here it goes.
Wax paper. Oh. Wax paper. I know. Yeah, you can just clip it right to the light. and it'll diffuse it perfectly. And if you don't think, or you can just use a t-shirt too. Yeah, you can use t-shirts, you can use bed sheets, you can literally shine the light through anything. I've seen people use printer paper. And you can see people do this all the time. This guy is using a $5,000 camera. He is using a $600 mic, a bunch of stands, some clips, and
wax paper.
Wax paper.
Yeah, that's something else.
It is.
Right, this, and the cheap Home Depot lights with wax paper.
Exactly, yeah, and this is used all the time. I see this where people on real shoots, just in case, will have some either diffusion cloth, diffusion paper, or wax paper just folded up in their kit, just in case, because you never know.
Man, this brings up a great topic for another masterclass, which is just like, you know, how much creativity and time do we waste waiting for things to be right?
Oh, yeah.
It's insane. It's
oh, yeah.
You know, it's funny. The room we walk through, there's a storage room before you get to this underneath our house. That's where I shot the original launch videos for Showbiz Blueprint.
Oh, that's great.
And I was like, I had the camera just tuned onto a purple bed sheet that was on that back wall.
Yeah.
But I said, man, if someone touches the zoom on this camera... It all ends.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the thing, making sure that you're...
Yeah.
Making sure your framing is good.
So, yeah.
But that's the thing is like, let's... okay, so we did diffusion. Now we're going to talk about bouncing. Okay. Bouncing light is sort of your other way to handle light. So this is sort of like... these are from stills, but it works the exact same in video. So we have this direct flash. So again, this is direct light versus bounced off the wall. Now, it's a little bit different than diffusion because it still gives you a higher power of light. So if you want to manage your, if you want to, I usually bounce one light and diffuse another. That way the diffused light will actually have some cut from it.
Right.
And then the other light will have all that power, but spread out. So
we painted this studio, this color Swiss coffee, which I read online all the studios use, this Swiss coffee for bouncing. So we shoot that light straight up.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking that you just had this at the ceiling so that we'd be more evenly lit.
No, but I mean, it's bouncing the light. Totally. What you're talking about here. We just got off.
So he's actually diffusing and bouncing a single light. Because these are really powerful lights, you can do that. But if you're using, let's say, lower-end work lights, if you do both, you're going to lose your light power, which is really important. But these are great.
These are turned down to minimum too. They have
really?
On them.
Wow, that's powerful lights in here. So how do you do this? Well, you literally bounce the light off the ceiling or the wall or something else. Now that's something else. Let's say you're outside and you want to bounce sun, right? Well, you can use one of these. You can take this and you can stand with the sun behind you as your backlight and then put one of these in front of you and position it so that it acts sort of as a mirror. Well, these things they fold up. They're real nice. I always carry one in my bag.
Yep.
But if you don't want to buy one of these, you can just use cardboard and tape.
White cardboard.
White cardboard. I use some poster board. I have these things. I just have a stack of them because I can get them at the dollar
store. We were testing it in here.
Yeah.
We were in here using it with the...
It's great. I get mine a little stiffer than that. Just like poster board, something that...
You're 27. I'm sorry. I don't want to do that. Here we go.
Yes.
Huzzah.
You see what happened there, right? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So we're going to go back here because
we're still talking about poster board?
Yeah, we're still talking about poster
board. Okay, I got you.
Poster board and black tape. Why black tape?
Yeah.
Because it's black.
Is that why?
I've also seen people use some really creative stuff. This is somebody bouncing it off of a cigarette package. Isn't that great? This is for still photography, but you can still, concept.
The flash goes up and then.
Yeah, so the flash. So instead of having the flash be directly at you, it's actually bouncing it out over a wider area because you're not getting that direct light. You're getting it bounced off.
And you're saying Marlboro filters is probably the best.
Yeah, we're sponsored, by the way.
Marlboro filters.
No, we're not.
Nice.
So that's the thing. So then again, if you don't have bounces, if you don't have any lighting at all, like use what you have. Look around you. Do you have lights in your house? I hope so. Otherwise, how did you get a computer?
Yeah.
Your priorities are messed up. But really, you can use either desk lights or the sun. And I say use natural light and the light that you have around yourself because some people think as, using the sun is sort of like, that's like a budget filmmaker technique. It doesn't really look that good. You know who just shot a movie using almost completely natural light. Here's a movie. You ever heard of The Revenant or Revenant or whatever that movie
is? Really?
Yeah, it was shot almost entirely with natural light.
But again, it's going back to what you said about, you know, all that matters is only what's in frame. So, yeah, I mean, if they use some kind of big thing just to block out enough for that, it'd be beautiful.
It completely works. It's one of those things that if you can frame it perfectly, if you can manage your set perfectly or close enough, then what you capture, and what we're capturing is light. Like, that's all we're capturing, is the light that's bouncing off whatever objects going into your camera, hitting your sensor. And that's what this is. Like, he's standing outside in...
And you can see out here, like behind him, it's all just too white. The sun, it would be blown out on the camera. Yeah. But they're not shooting that. They're only shooting...
And there are a couple of techniques for shooting outside. What you want to look for is a day that has cloud cover, or the sun behind clouds at least. But what cloud cover will do is it will turn the entire sky into a softbox.
It's your diffuser.
It is your diffuser. Wow. It's beautiful. It looks awesome. Looks amazing when it's done. And that's
why clouds are called wax paper of the sky. I never knew that.
I never heard that.
No, so. I never had it either.
Yeah, but that's the thing, amazing. Is like, looking at for these particular things, shoot in the shade, shoot against a tree that's in the shade, something that gives you that ability to manage your light more.
And it's funny, how different is this than when we're on stage doing live performing and the entire the entire stage is seen. We can control what people are looking at to some extent, but it's, boy, this we have ultimate. This is great.
Oh yeah. And that's the thing is, so now we're going to talk about executing sound. So what, first let's just talk about what this guy is doing. This is a sound guy holding a boom mic, and it's got what's called a dead cat on it, which is just a big fluffy wind sock that prevents wind from entering your mic. Well, you don't really need to worry about that stuff if you are if you're managing your sound properly. So really, you need to know what types of mics you have. Two basic types. We're not going to get into cardioid, hypercardioid, all that stuff. We're going to just say omnidirectional and directional. Okay, so you're omnidirectional on the left, right there, or is this reverse? No, let's just say left. And otherwise, the words would read backwards, right?
Right.
I should have thought of that. But so the omnidirectional gets sound mostly equally. There's a little variation from every single direction. I believe these are omnidirectional mics. And then you look at your directional mics, which I happen to have. One right here. This is a directional mic. This is a Rode NTG2. This is what I use for a lot of.
Is that the same?
Nope, that's your. That's
this is a Podcaster Pro.
It's a Rode video mic. I don't know the model, but I've seen. They're pretty much equal, but they're meant for different.
This is a boom, though. This is I hang this.
Yeah, totally. This too. Yeah. Yep. But I also mount this directly on my camera if I'm shooting close up, and it works really, really well. You don't need one of these. You need a mic. So there are some tips for how to actually get your mic to sound better. Rule number one, which is pretty much the only rule, get your mic as close to the sound as possible.
Sound source.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So people think that you shouldn't have a mic directly in front of your mouth or something like that because you're going to breathe on it. That really, if you're putting it off to the side, just as long as it's close as possible. And there's this thing called the arm's reach rule. If your mic is further away than an arm's reach away from your sound source, it's too far. Mm. So if you need to hide your mic in your set, put it down here, put it on their clothes, put it on a similar colored fabric, put it in between buttons on a button up, or something like that, just so you can get the sound source clear enough. And it's true, you can use wireless mics to get that to your camera if your camera's really far away. What I have done is just had an audio cable that's that long to plug in. I have a 30-foot audio cable that I can just run that's just
to a lav.
Yeah. Because occasionally you just need to do something. I don't want to manage with wireless things. I want something that works right now, right here. And I can frame around that, and I can just literally run over, put a mic where it needs to go, plug it into something that captures it, whether it's quarter inch XLR or eighth inch. I just have an input, and I put that into something like, what is that? What did I do there?
This is arguable, but do you think,
what?
I mean, audio is at least half of watching a video and making it enjoyable. It may be more than half.
I would say it's more. I would say it's more because people will judge audio quality more harshly if it's poor. They'll judge the video as a whole if your audio quality is poor. So if you can get by with shaky video and really not great resolution, and you can overexpose this and that, if your audio sucks, people will hate your video. Like, that's number one. If your audio sucks, they'll hate your video. If you're going to invest in one thing, invest in good audio equipment and different ways of capturing sound. Mm. So if you're capturing...
And a phone is fine, like you said earlier.
Like, a phone is fine.
Yeah, it's great.
Just your digital mic. Recording, get, yeah. Get mic. A mic that you can get close to the scene. If you're recording just in-camera sound, there's so much that you can't do. It limits your production to so few options just because you have to capture your sound in a way that will make the sound good. Otherwise, people are just going to lose interest. I mean, if there's tinny sounds, if all that stuff, and there's certain ways to fix it using ADR and things like that, we can get into that. But ADR is a nightmare, and it makes your post-production so much bigger than it needs to be.
He's going to blow, folks.
Really?
Get a mic. He's going to blow.
Bad memories.
Just get a mic and a recorder. He's going to blow. All right.
So this is is sort of what we're talking about. Again, like, here's Zoom H4n, and this is what I use. These are truly fantastic pieces of equipment. Right here, they have two inputs. It's they have XLR and quarter-inch inputs, so you don't need one or the other. You can use either. They're amazing. Yeah, take it up there and show them those. Yeah. Hybrid plugs, they're awesome.
Yeah.
And then if you look at the top of there, you see two directional mics. And you can actually grab those mics and reposition them. Jeez. So go ahead, turn them.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
It just snaps. Is that good?
It just snaps and
so it's telling you where the sound, then you just rotate them.
Yeah, so you just it's beautiful because you can turn it to where your sound sources are.
See, it wants to stay focused on
and it can record four channels simultaneously. No,
that's insane.
I am not sponsored.
Right. No, that's
like, and it's they're just amazing.
And the price on that starts with a one.
Yeah, it's like one, you can get them used for like $120.
Unbelievable.
They're really fantastic.
Ridiculous. Yeah.
But, you know, going to up your audio game, this is amazing. I've seen podcasts. Like, you want to produce a podcast? Get one of these, hit record, you're done.
Yeah, Chris Ruggiero, I think he does it. He does a great podcast, but he uses one of these. I've seen him in the back of his van just doing them.
Yeah.
They sound like you're in a studio. It's crazy.
Right. And I mean, if you want, you can put a little bit of like, hiss reduction or something like that just to like make sure, but you don't need to. It's ready to be published.
But this with two $20 lav mics, and you would be...
Not even that. You can just set this on a table and have a conversation.
Oh, have this within
like you don't
no arm's length.
This has two mics on it. It has two directional mics on it. It's great.
Gotcha.
But that's kind of what that is. So these are your basic rules. Again, get your mic as close as possible and hide it in the shot if you need to. Make sure your recording levels won't clip. And this is where something like this really shines. So your recording levels can be set to auto. But if you have, let's say, clipping in your audio for any reason, it will sound like garbage, absolute garbage. And what that means is that your mic recording level is set so that it will absorb a certain amount. Are you going to make us clip right now?
No, I'm going to show
this. He's over there fiddling with
this. I'm going to show this. No.
Oh, okay. so go take a look at that.
That's you talking.
Yeah, so this is me talking right now, and if you were to turn up the recording volume, this bar would go over to the left side right there, and it would cut out. So, I mean, I don't know. If you want to turn it up, you can, but it's one of those things where it sounds completely drowned out and compressed to the point where you're losing so much data. And it's data that you can't get back. That's the problem. Is if you lose data, whether it's color data or sound data, right there. That, and I'm sure it doesn't sound very good at all right now. Like, how's that sounding to the people who are listening? Good, bad? Is it still good?
No, it's probably not good because it's hitting red lights and going over the.
Okay, well, anyway, it doesn't matter. What happens when you clip is. Get that data back. Now you can clip in video and sound. So if you're clipping in sound, you're going to lose that particular type of frequency. If you're clipping in video, you're going to lose that color data. And we're going to get to that when we talk about exposure. So then the other part is don't underestimate the value of good sound. Like, really, good sound will save your video even if your video sucks. So that's the whole thing about like really awesome value that. And good now stuff, yeah. We're going to talk about the biggest bulk. We're going to talk about executing your camera. Know your camera. Learn your camera. Love your camera. Even if you have a terrible, terrible camera.
Love it.
Love your camera. Love your terrible, terrible camera. And this is because like, even if you have the best camera in the world, like I have a friend of mine who has a Red Epic, I think. And we just shot a really amazing music video on it where my girlfriend, fully body painted, was walking around Oakland at like 3 a.m.
Wow.
And he's following her with this thing and it's like beautiful and she's dripping in water simultaneously. So at the end of the music video, all the paint is running down and that color is just, so, I wish I had a photo from
it. Yeah.
You know, I think we should see that for educational purposes.
I think so too. I would love to share that. Actually, let me get a phone.
I'd like to see her getting painted.
So
how does that happen?
It's
did Allison do that?
Allison did that, yeah.
Behind the scenes. So, behind the scenes.
Oh, yeah, sure. No, we're not going there. No. So that was me doing a different kind of act that is a secret.
Hey, Brian, see you later. I think yeah. Brian's got
it. Oh, Brian, thanks for dropping in. Check the rest of the replay. So anyway.
Do you have a picture? Do you want me to hold it up?
No.
Okay, I'll find it. No problem.
Yeah. So this is sort of what we're going to is he has this phenomenal camera. I've been on a shoot with him where he had somebody else shoot some footage. This guy had never used a camera like this, and he did not know exactly how to capture images properly on it. This amazing camera did not look good. Yet this friend of mine can take this camera and make it look like gold, absolute gold. So really, know your camera. Oh, we're gonna get rid of that window that just popped up there. Yeah. And love it, even if that. And then follow the rules. I'm gonna give you the rules, don't worry. And then follow the rules unless you know how to break them. And literally, I will give you the rules. And then this order down here is very, very important. We're gonna have this for you just in a download that we're gonna post I'll later.
Sure. We can actually put this whole slide deck up.
Totally, yeah, I'll post it up there.
And just for timing sakes, it's 9:05:43 after the hour. We're gonna try and go to the bottom, and if it runs a little over and you have to go, that'd be great, or if you wanna catch the replay, but maybe we can finish in a half hour.
Yeah, I think we can finish in a half an hour.
Awesome.
So, great, so this is, you manage your set first, so set up all your props, then frame your camera. After you have your camera framed, set up your lights. Then once your lighting is set up, you adjust your image in your camera. So this is like, your camera is really the second and fourth thing that you do.
Wow.
Then after you have your camera and your set and everything sort of set up, once you make sure you get the visual stuff done, then you test your sound. You make sure that where the people are, they sound good. Only then do you record. Because if you, like, this is literally set up in how hard things are to change. So if your
disorder you have, yeah, right, I see. Yep.
Your set is harder to change than your framing. Your framing is, your lighting is dependent on your framing. Your image adjustment is dependent upon your lighting. Oh, and man. Then your testing of the sound is dependent upon just making sure that everything else is set up.
I added this to the chat earlier, but I feel like I should just tell you because you didn't see me type it. You're like Rain Man about this stuff. Oh. I did write that in the chat. All
right. Great, cool. Yeah, I'll take that. I'll count cards.
Yeah, you are. Yeah, definitely the set first.
Yeah. The set first. Yeah. So this is AJA Scion. This is sort of a camera that I shoot a lot on.
They're in our small town.
Yes, that is
funny. AJA, that's amazing.
The folks that... that set this whole thing up, which is great. But AJA does a lot of cool stuff. They made one camera once and they called it a mistake. I call it an amazing thing. It is. Yeah, so there's a whole story about how they mismanaged the launch of it. But it's a great camera that nobody uses because of that, which means that there's sort of some of them floating around out there. They make beautiful images that are captured really well. And it's essentially a film studio in your hands. So you have everything that you need, capture sound to do all this stuff in 4K or 4K plus. But let's say you don't have one of these. You're pretty much going to be using a camcorder or a DSLR or mirrorless something. The main difference between these cameras, and there are other differences, is that usually, and I say usually, your camcorders do not have switchable lenses, but they do have zoom lenses. Mm. And your DSLRs or mirrorless cameras have switchable lenses, and they can use primes or zooms or whatever, and they offer a different level of complication because they're mainly, arguably, used for stills. And then video is sort of a component to them. Their image sensors are set up for stills first, which allows them to have much more like much more intense image managing capabilities.
There's one, like my, I have a Canon T5i. And
I have the T6i sitting right here.
Yeah,
it's great.
Well, as we said, stiffer, higher rank camera. Yeah. But those have a 30-minute limit, which may be a problem for recording like a long performance.
And I have a thing for that. So when you're using, so for instance, let me get this out. So this is a T6i crop sensor. It's not a full frame sensor, but it's a great run and gun DSLR camera for video. What you can do with certain DSLRs is you can put something into them called Magic Lantern. So Magic Lantern is something that you would put in the SD card that you would then put inside the camera, and it would actually change the firmware of the camera itself, and it can remove that 30-minute limit.
Right.
So that's how you get around that. If you're
shooting, that like the first thing when your camera goes wrong, though, the Canon says, do you have Magic Lantern on it?
Yep.
So they're not crazy about it, but
no, and it is. It does have some bugs.
Have you played with it?
So this camera actually doesn't have a version of Magic Lantern on it. I am actually trying to work with a guy, trying to convince him to allocate some time to working on this camera with Magic Lantern.
Okay, cool.
To get it for that, but it is for the T5i.
Yeah.
And it is for the 5D Mark III, 5D Mark. Which are the most common video, high-end video DSLRs. That being said, the main thing is lens switching. So we're going to talk about lenses for a second. You can switch. This is not my collection. I wish this was my collection. Yeah. I do not really have a collection. I rent lenses. I rent cameras. When I do a shoot, I usually rent the camera. So that's another thing that we're going to talk about.
Yeah, tell them that.
Set up your project beforehand. Don't buy anything. Rent what you really need for that particular project. Then buy the equipment that you want for all the projects. So that's what I recommend, and we're going to talk about that later. So this is pretty much your basics of different lenses. So you have an 18mm, a 24mm, a 37mm, and as you can see, the house is getting there. So what can we tell from the numbers on the millimeter part? Oh yeah, sure, that is your zoom. So you have a lens like this, which actually has a built-in zoom, and this will go from 18 to 55. And we can see over here, we would go from frame
upper
left to the one right below that with this particular lens.
Gotcha.
That would be your zoom range. And it changes your focal perspective a little bit. So let's say that you have a phone and you want this capability to do that. Well, normally people would do the pinch thing and that would zoom in. That only zooms in digitally.
Digital zoom.
It doesn't zoom in
optically
which is a problem because you can do that in post, zoom in digitally in post, no matter what. But you can't get that data back in post.
Yep.
So it's better to shoot wide if you're using a phone. So how do you do this stuff with a phone? How do you zoom in optically? Well, they have lenses. I highly recommend getting these lenses. They're just any sort of lens that clips on. They're rated at the exact, they're usually rated micro and macro. Macro is sort of like your wide angle lens, and then micro is sort of your, I guess you could say,
zoomed in
narrowed.
Yeah.
But that's the thing is, get some of these. They come in kits.
Showing me their pictures just clipped on right in
clipped
front of the
on, and then you can switch one of these lenses into that clip, and then you just clip it on. And literally, I've seen these hanging from people's keychains, and they're great. Okay, exposure triangle. Now we're going to talk about the really nitty gritty stuff. So open up your brain. It's going to get technical a little bit, but I have it hopefully so that
here he goes.
Yeah, here we go. Okay, so we have three things. I mentioned these before: your ISO, your shutter speed, and your aperture. So ISO, people disagree about how to pronounce that. So these numbers are sort of how you keep track of this. 100, 200, 400, 800, all the way. Yeah. Oh, great. So then we have 100, 200, and it doubles all the way up here. And then we have shutter speed, 1 over 150.
250,
or 250, yep. 1 over 125, 1 over 160. So this is really your shutter speed is the rate at which you are capturing an image. And that means that you are, it's 1/125th of a second. And then it goes all the way down to 1 second if you're doing like long exposure photography. Like that. So aperture is your iris for this stuff. So that is how much light you're letting in. So what do these mean? Increasing any one of these will get more light. Decreasing any one of these will get less light. So there's a problem with this though. Each one of these things to get more or less light has a trade-off. So what you're trying to do overall by adjusting is get your image so that it looks like this, well-balanced. You don't, this isn't blown out. You can't just see my shirt sort of grayish and then us moving around it. Like that's what would happen if we were overexposed. If we were underexposed, it would just look dark and shapes. But you want it sort of balanced like this, more or less. So
I'll blow up the background.
There you go. See that hot spot right there? See how you have no color data? Right in here.
It confuses the lens. No idea what to do.
I am super dark. That's because this camera's already on.
Ben, you might want to
I'm sorry, what was that?
I'm sorry, Ben, you might want to mute your mic.
Barry? Oh, okay. So
is my mic all right, Mark? No.
No, it was fine.
Okay.
So this is so now I'm going to show you what the trade-off is. Here we go. So ISO, the higher it goes, the more visual noise you get. Your shutter speed, the higher it goes, the more blurry your images are going to get, and there's also a limit to how far you can push that. Then your depth of field, the more light you go, though it is limited by your lens itself, your depth of field shrinks. So we're going to talk about each one of these in particular. So this is specifically dealing with your aperture. So over here, you can see right here, we're gonna focus on this top number. This 1.8 is really as low as most lenses that can get to. However, this lens only goes down to a 3.5. This is a kit lens, it's a very inexpensive lens. Mm-hmm. But the lens that I have attached to this camera is a 50 millimeter lens called the Nifty 50. It's awesome. It's one of the best lenses ever.
Yep.
And it's only $100, which is great. But it's a prime lens. It only shoots at 50 millimeters.
No zoom on that.
Sorry. No zoom.
Yep, yep.
But it goes down to 1.8, which means it can let in so much light and get your focal range small. So I'm going to show you what that looks like right here. On the left, you see how the background is completely out of focus, and pretty much the back edge of that sculpture is out of focus. But the front edge is crisp as can be all the way going down there. Now over here.
And the way that pops out of the picture.
Yeah, it's completely.
That's pops what out. It does.
So this is what we really are after. We're after this to some degree. There's too much. I've seen it where people's noses and eyes are in focus,
right. But
their hair is out of focus. When you're doing a talking head, you don't need that.
Not much. A talking head, but in a story, a love story with Meryl Streep crying.
Absolutely.
I mean, my gosh.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Getting just to focus on that tear.
On the tear? You don't want the ears in focus?
No. No, yeah, but so then we'll open the aperture up to like f4, and now you can see that this is a little bit more crisp. You can get a little bit more detail out of there. Also, this back edge is completely in focus. In fact, this whole framing here is completely in focus, and all that you have out of focus is that back. Mm-hmm. Now, if we take it up to an f8, which is pretty closed, this is almost in focus back here. You can pretty much make out all the detail. You can at least tell what it is, that it's some sort of...
You can tell they need a gardener. I mean, right?
Yeah, pretty much. No. But over here, it's just color and a shape.
Yeah,
You can maybe make out that blurry line, but that's about it.
And what else did you change on these? You got the shutter going from 500?
So that's the thing is, we're keeping the light amount the same, so we had to change the shutter in the ISO, because if we were to just take this image and then... take it up to an F4, it would just get darker.
Darker, gotcha.
So we wouldn't be able to see any of
it. So you slowed the shutter down to allow more time for the capture. Do these numbers play the same as you're shooting video? I mean, I understand
photography plays the exact same in video. Gotcha. It's the exact same, except it's more pronounced. Mm. So each change that you see in a photo will actually be more pronounced, especially when you're dealing with ISO. So we're going to talk about that after we talk about shutter speed.
Shutter speed, right.
Shutter speed pretty much captures movement more crisp. If you're shooting somebody running and you don't want them to look crazy blurry, shoot it in a faster shutter speed. The faster you go, the more physical light you need, sure.
Like the water drops here. I mean, this
But here we're going to look at this. So this is at 1/1000th of a second. And this is at 1/15th. Yeah, you couldn't film in this because 1/15th of a second, you couldn't get a frame from. You can only go at double, you make that number below the one, double your frame rate. And we're going to get to that later in the tips and tricks section.
That'll be Sunday morning.
No, that's in about 5 minutes. Yeah, we're good. So this is your ISO and your noise. So this is what I mean is, so right here, this is 100. This is really, you want to get your ISO as low as possible. It is the last thing you adjust. Mm. You want to play with, in that order, you want to play with your aperture first because you want to get your depth of field at the right level and understand how much you can play with that. Then you want to operate on your shutter speed so that you can really get the right amount of light there. Then go to your ISO.
Wow.
So that is, there's a procedure for all this.
Do you ever use auto ISO? Or is it? I have never not used auto ISO. So this is sad. I will change that. I will play with that.
I do not, because as soon as you put in auto ISO, you lose control of one thing, which is the amount of noise that you're going to have.
Okay.
It would, in a lot of situations, bump it up where I know what my sensor is capable of, and I know that I can adjust certain levels up so that I don't lose color data. Like let's say I'm looking at an image on this screen and it looks dark to me. What you can do is you can bring up what's called a histogram, and it will actually show you the graph. I'm not going to get into histograms in this particular thing. It's a little bit too technical for this, I think, under the time constraint that we have. But that's the word, look it up, histogram, awesome. So now we're gonna go here. So you can see just literally the higher your ISO, if the light levels maintain the same, the more grainy that image gets. So you wanna really manage that down. And cameras do certain things better than others, but ISO is one of those things that every camera sort of struggles with a couple exceptions. So now we're gonna get into the rules and what you don't break. Here we are. Never film at 30 frames per second.
This should be facial.
Never film at 30 frames per second. Okay, so I'm just gonna talk about this for a second.
You told me about this when I asked you about this.
Yeah.
The quick thing is that's what we're used to seeing
Home video. Home video is filmed in 30 frames per second, and sitcoms are filmed in 30 frames per second. It is 90s television all over again.
Right, you told me that. Friends,
Seinfeld. Yep, 30 frames per second.
And was that a creative choice? I mean, that's what they wanted for those films? Or
that's the thing is, so arguably no, because television was delivered at, in this country, 29.997 like that. And that's a whole different story.
Okay.
But so we're psychologically trained to see 30 frames per second as being something that is home video.
Huh.
It just is. And sure, those sitcoms are professional television, but every home camera that you would get at any point during that would be 30 frames per second. So we see it as poor video, even though it's technically better than 24. It's a little bit smoother. It's a little bit nicer. So then, don't know why I'm pushing that thing. What is that?
that was a different one.
So either 24 frames per second or 60 frames per second. Shoot in 60 when you're doing B-roll, which is just any sort of cutaway shot that you want. Let's say you want to show, look at this thing. And then you do another shot of this actual thing. Shoot that in 60 frames per second so that you can slow it down to get that really buttery look if you want to edit it. We'll talk about
Every movie we've ever seen is 24.
No.
No, okay.
Some aren't. Okay. And certain, so now the way that codecs are, you can get 60 frames per second video. You can get 40, like The Hobbit was shot in, and filmed in 44.
Wow. Interesting. They're just playing with that. And
yeah.
But you know, you say you were predisposed to or trained to see 30 frames a second as mm-hmm. home video. 24 is kind of...
Well, that's sort of what they were looking for. They were looking to find a space in time that that was done in that didn't have a preconception about it.
Ah.
So there was another one that was filmed in 120 frames per second. I can't remember who did it, but it was about this military guy's march and his flashbacks and all this stuff. Very, very good film. Can't remember it. 120 frames per second. The problem with shooting at 120 frames per second is that you need to shoot it at your shutter speed at being 1 over 240 at least.
So that
means that you need so much more light, which means that your production is bigger, which means that your budget needs to be bigger and all that stuff. So I say shoot 24 when you need to and on for everything, just because you need less light to shoot in 24.
Can you change that on an iPhone to 24?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I can do 24 in there.
Also, again, so I just mentioned this, shutter speed needs to be at least 2 times your frames per second. So 24 equals at least 1/50th because 1 over 48 doesn't exist. So at least 1/50th. If you're shooting 60, it needs to be 1/120th.
Don't go below that on shutter speed.
Yeah, you can technically push it, but you shouldn't because your image will end up looking muddy and just flickery. It just doesn't look good.
Sure.
So the higher your frames per second, the more light you need. We just went over
yep.
that. Adjust your settings in this order. And I already talked about
yep,
this.
We got
aperture,
this.
Shutter, ISO. Also, when using high ISO, shoot something bright and colorful. This is sort of an interesting thing. So if on my shirt, which is black, and I wore this shirt specifically so that I could do this, if we had a high ISO on this camera, you'd be able to see all these particles moving around. Now, the thing about high ISO in images is you click, oh, cool, it just looks textured. Okay, you can get away with higher ISOs in still images. In video, that noise moves because each separate still of the video has its own independent noise. So it's really obvious for people watching video with high ISO what is going on. It just looks terrible. It looks so terrible. So on a black shirt like this, and I don't see any on the monitor that we have.
Mm-hmm.
However, that's across the room. So
here's this.
Yeah. So it looks fine on this broadcast, yeah. but it's one of those things where when you're producing a video for YouTube or for a DVD and you're using high ISO, just shoot it on like lighter things. So Barry
yeah.
would be fine wearing a colorful shirt with patterns on it. This would be great. White walls, all that's fine. Shooting outdoors just with more light than you need.
Mm-hmm.
All that stuff, just to get the settings in that manageable zone so that you're not testing the limits of one thing or another.
Love that.
So then this is a rule that I really, really wish more people would follow. When you can't fix something in camera, change your set, your lighting, or your framing, okay? If something doesn't look good, and you can't make it look good on your camera by adjusting your settings, go to somewhere else. Change something else. Get a light closer. You know, actually pick up and move your scenery. The reason why this is like, we're setting up a set. Cool. Really set it up. Like get it so that it doesn't just look good to your eyes because people aren't going to be looking at it through your eyes. They're going to be looking at it through your camera. So you have to make sure that whatever you're doing looks good through your camera. So if it doesn't look good, change it or don't use it at all.
Interesting.
So
yeah.
Really, like that's what it is. And don't fix in post. Do
we'll,
not
fix we'll fix
in
it post. Later is not a good
guess. You won't fix it yeah. later. No one fixes it later. It just looks bad. And that's what happens is, so I really can't drive that home enough. So these are some tips. So plan your project fully before you buy anything. And again, you can rent expensive equipment. 2-day shipping. And I have a link for you at the end of this. But the link is borrowlenses.com. That's what I use. There's also just any lens rental that's sort of close by you. Look at the geographic location so you can get good shipping rates. And it's a lot easier to just rent equipment that you need for a project or just use what you have. Like if you really want to get fancy, rent the equipment. Otherwise, just use your phone. So shoot in a higher resolution than you plan to publish in. This is good. So I can shoot in 4K with this phone. This is a S8 Plus, which is great. It's a great video phone. But also, if I'm shooting in 1080p like this T6i does, I'm not going to publish in 1080p. Rarely will I publish in 1080p. Not only because I can adjust framing in post, but also because if I publish in 720, it scales down those pixels. Yeah. I have a little bit more room with the noise. It means that those pixels get averaged down. So if I have, let's say, one noisy pixel in there, that noisy pixel gets absorbed by the others, which is really useful. So if you're shooting 1080, publish in 720. If you're shooting 4K, publish in 1080 or 2K.
Interesting.
And it will just, your image will look so much better and you'll have a lot more leeway. So that's just, I'd highly recommend that if you can. Also, sound tip. This thing that I'm about to tell you is going to save you a ton of headache. Shoot in small rooms. Small spaces are best. But whenever you hear an echo, and we have some echo here, just a little bit.
Yeah, I'm still playing with sound, yeah.
You manage your sound as close to your source as possible, and it sounds fine.
Yep.
It sounds great, actually. But let's say you're using a shotgun, or let's say
why I don't use that shotgun in here. It still sounded echoey. So
there's two things that you can do that will really, really cut your sound. You can, number one, put things in the corners of your room. So right here, all these corners are completely bare, which means that when the sound reflects that corner, it's just going to reflect, and then you're going to get so much more more bounce, and it'll actually just cause more audio collisions, which will space out the echo. So it'll make the echo not louder, but longer, which is not a good thing. So you put things in your corner that will absorb your sound. The other thing that I didn't tell you is if you hang something in front of where the mic is. So Barry's got a curtain behind the camera to absorb sound, and that works. But if you really want to get the most sound absorption, hanging it, like if we had a curtain behind us and we had a shotgun mic pointing towards us, that sound would not only be absorbed through the curtain, but it would be trapped between the curtain and the wall. Mm. So it would actually be much, much easier. So those are the two things that I would really say. First, small room, and then if you can't do small room, put it in the corners, and put a hanging piece of sheet or curtain or whatever you have in front of the mic. Also, use autofocus to pull focus, then switch it to manual focus. This is something that is really, really easy with separate lenses that have a dedicated switch for focusing. So I can just switch it to autofocus. It autofocuses on me.
Boom.
Then I switch it to manual. It stays there.
Yeah, no matter what.
Because, I mean, I don't know if you've seen a lot of video that in the middle of it, it's so annoying. So annoying.
Like when I hold something up here.
Right, and that's the thing.
I think I'm on a, yeah.
But autofocus works great for situations like this.
Yep.
Also, these camcorders have better autofocuses than DSLRs. DSLRs have that are made for images,
always looking,
not video. So, autofocus just to pull your focus initially, then switch it to manual.
Okay.
Then, friends and favors for filming are fantastic.
Yeah, you went for it. You went hard. You dug in.
So really, but actually deadly serious about this stuff.
Yeah. No,
it's... Get people to help you film. Filming alone and struggling technically in a room by yourself with lights and trying to be creative simultaneously when you're learning a hard skill is a nightmare. Maybe some of you like that, but not me. I really learn best with a partner in crime. I like to experiment and play off each other and just have a good time.
Yeah,
really?
It's great. Yeah, of course.
Getting a camera out and making a couple drinks and just like having a good, fun, interesting time with some portion of a script. That's a good night to me. Like that's fun.
Yeah.
But, and that's how I really learned to do this stuff without the drinks. I was too young. But that's what it is. Just playing around with different things like
Nick. This. I got to do a quick story about Nick. Nick is the reason I have this trophy. This is first place for Dancing with Our Stars in our community because I said, Nick, I want to do this thing where I kind of appear on stage and Nick goes, oh no, you're going to come out of a big flash bomb. And the dude, so there were little things. You love looking at the little things and going, no, you got to do it this way.
Right. I, I don't know. That's the thing. Well, you wanted something that was doable. Yeah. I wanted something that was illegal.
Yeah. Barry, does that footage exist? I'd pay.
Right. actually,
yes, it does. Yeah. I'll show you that.
And then again, at the very bottom, cut corners when it's appropriate. I really do mean cut every single corner when it's appropriate. If you're cutting corners on sound when you need better sound, no good. But if you have good sound, cut corners on your camera. Cut corners on your lighting if you are going to shoot outside. If you have freedom of location, really, why invest in a major lighting kit when most of the time you're just going to be outside anyways? You don't need the bounces. You don't need the soft boxes. You can just use a piece of paper. You can use a piece of wax paper for that stuff. You can use a CD case when you're using gels. Use some craft paper, some of that crinkly, like, colored stuff, and just tape it to your lights. The reason why we use LEDs is because they don't get hot. If they don't get hot, we don't need professional gels that are used to withstanding heat.
Yeah, this room would be unbearable.
It would be completely unbearable with the
incandescent. These are all LEDs.
But LEDs run really cool, relatively. I mean, like, other than using like halogens or something like that, those would melt anything except for gels. So if we're not using these really, really hot lights, we don't need to use this heat resistant material. So we can just use a CD case. We can use anything. It's color.
And a timely insert here. Jesse asked, is there any easy solution for teleprompters?
I'm getting into that, actually.
I have one in the office that just works on an iPad, and it listens to my voice. I don't even need anyone to operate. It was a $14 app.
Yeah.
And I just talk, and it rolls, and a great little reflection piece that hooks right on. I'll put links to those on this page,
I have Jesse. At the last slide that I put into this, at the very, very end, it is a teleprompter, but I will just tell you, like, the box that my camera came in, I took that because I knew the camera would fit in it.
Yeah.
I drilled a hole through the box, mounted my my tripod through that, and then built just a little cutout in the front, and then mounted a piece of glass, just a piece of glass. Doesn't need to be amazing. Just a little piece of glass in at an angle, and then I put my smartphone with the words scrolling in a mirror image, and it's as good. I just recorded a great video with it. The only thing that I will say is make sure that the base of whatever you're building the teleprompter on is solid. Also, all of the screws that go to your camera are standard size screws. You can go to a hardware store and get the same screw type if you need a longer screw to fit through like a metal plate or a wooden plate or something. So, yeah, building a teleprompter, highly recommend it. Mine cost me $3.50. It was really easy, and it's as professional as it can get. So now, here we go. Well, by as professional as it can get, I mean as unprofessional as it can get. So let's talk about post-production for a second. Don't edit if you don't need to. Really, don't edit if you don't need to. If you can set up your project so that all you need to do is just clip end, and then export, or clip end, and then just stack one clip after another, and then export, that's great, especially if you're doing a longer project like a DVD or something like that. Originally, this presentation was going to be about back of room sales DVDs and how to produce them. We were talking this is a long subject, so let's save that for another time.
Yep.
But we do have some of those things in this talk. So this whole thing is like, if you are setting up your script and setting up your project so that it can be just film it, clip it, import it, export it. There's no crazy editing. You're not doing picture in picture. You don't need any, lower thirds? You don't need any like that. It's just, great, here's the content. You're done. And that's one of the things that I would really recommend just setting up your project as. Also, editing is a full class in itself. We are not going to talk about editing and techniques of editing. What I am going to talk about is Premiere Pro or iMovie. iMovie. Use what's free. Use what's easy. Personally, I use Premiere Pro because I do a lot of really complicated stuff. But Barry, you were just saying to me the other day, you have not touched an editing rig.
Well, since I created the live thing, I just...
Right.
So, but I love Premiere Pro. I'm still paying for it monthly. My son uses it for his weird things. But yeah.
And that's the thing is, so if you're not going to take this time to learn the skills, just hire somebody if you need that. Editing is really cheap if you know where to look for it. If you know what you want, if you know what you want it to look like, do that. If you can take, literally just like take stills from other movies that you like that you want to recreate, put those in your storyboard. Make sure that other people, if you're communicating that idea, that you cut the corners. Don't draw every single thing if you hate drawing. Literally find a movie that scene is very similar to, take a still out of that. Find another project, yeah. Take a still out of that. Oh, you like another instructional DVD that somebody else did? Just take a still out of that, import it in, that's your
I kind of like this. I like the look. We just got back from touring Los Angeles. My son is very interested in going to film school. We toured six film schools down in LA. There are hundreds of kids at each one. And when I looked at them and talked to them, I was like, these kids are dying for something to do.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're dying, and it's a labor pool, and they have equipment from school. And so don't look past that great resource of local college students.
And also mentoring. So
be a mentor. Yeah.
I just started a mentorship with someone for his senior project.
I did that last year. That was great.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
What a great thing to do.
What am I mentoring him in? Not magic. Video. So now I'm teaching him how to edit. I'm teaching him how to do all this stuff. We're doing a separate project that he wants to do. But through those skills, he's looking for all of this stuff. If we produce a DVD together, that would be fantastic. Give him a percentage off the top. That's great. That's easy.
Yeah, give him an A in a class. Right. He'll be a kid while everyone else was helping the librarian sort new books or create the Dewey Decimal System. They'll be like, here's what I made.
So let's talk about this DVD production part. So this is executing production and distribution. So there's really two questions here. DVDs or digital downloads? Sure, there are others. You could put it out on a flash drive. You could even do VHS. You could do Laserdisc now.
Right, the delivery is not the biggest part.
Yeah. It's literally like, okay, you're going to produce it for a package situation. You're going to have it in a back of room sale situation or whatever. So that's the part, is if you're producing it for a back of room sale situation, why not produce it and let it be available everywhere? If you're going to put it out for real. Make it a quality that is actually producible and sellable in a retail environment. If I am producing something, I'm going to produce it to the point where you can walk into a store and the owner will be proud to sell you that DVD. That's the quality mark for me. The quality mark for you may be very, very different. It could be, I just want to get the information out. As long as the content is good, then, and people appreciate the content, that's fine. But for me, I say, if you're going to do back of room sales, if you're going to do any of that, then you might as well have it be set up for either online or retail.
You know, it's funny too, to circle this back to the beginning where we talked about storyboard and having kind of the end product in mind. If you want to do something back of room sales and you have a, you know, you're a magician, you have an act and you want to do like a piece of your show, kind of a highlight,
right?
A few tricks you could teach at the end for the, that's a storyboard. You have a storyboard of where you want to take this thing. You can start plotting it out. You can make sure you have the assets, the footage, you know, shooting live shows,
right.
Going into a studio and shooting the tricks. Creating your asset list for follow-up.
Yeah. And making it a promotional thing for you and what you do. Instead of just making it be the be-all, end-all, oh, it's $25 and that's the end. No, make it a tool to connect with people. Mm-hmm. Have it also promote your show. Have it promote your speaking career. Have it promote all of these other aspects of what you do.
Wow.
Get following on Facebook through it. Mm-hmm. Direct people to your website where you have supplemental stuff for it, other videos, things that will be updated, even if you know you update it a couple of times just so that people are really getting a lot of content.
Yeah.
But if you put out a basic juggling DVD.
One sale, sorry, yeah.
That's one.
Yeah.
But if you, in that DVD, bring them to your website where they can learn more and sign up for something and then eventually become another customer again, That's great to include that in your product.
That's storyboarding, man. I love that whole idea.
One of the reasons why scripting and really coming up with the idea is important. So how do you put it all together? Well, the best way, the cheapest and best software that I've found is iSkySoft DVD Creator. This creates a DVD image that you can burn directly to this, or you can get the DVD image that you can send to someone to produce it for you. And we're going to talk about it'll take you right to the site. Yeah, DVD Creator.
Right, yeah.
There. Cool.
Yeah, you can just poke around that.
So go down to official. Awesome. This thing, you can get a free trial of it right here. And I recommend when you do the free trial, literally just get it before you want to publish your DVD, and it's free.
Oh, gotcha.
That's it. Yep, yep. Otherwise, it costs $40.
Yep.
$40, not a lot. And we're right. going to get into pricing in a second. Here we are. I'm going to go back to, I don't know what this, there we are. I don't know how to use Macs.
This isn't a Mac.
It's not a Mac. I don't know how to use computers. So, yeah, no. So this is what I really get back to is you can make it yourself, you can do it yourself, or just hire it out. It is really, really cheap to hire out somebody making a DVD image with a menu and everything like that. Personally, iSkySoft has really, really beautiful menus, specifically for darker tones and things like that. And you can import custom images very, very quickly, very easily,
awesome.
All with the trial version. It's so good. So that's one thing that I would really recommend. Also, so let's look at what DVD production breakdown cost-wise looks like. So there's a lot of text here, I know, so I'm just going to walk you through it line by line. So let's say you wanted to buy custom labeled 6-color image labels of a 4.7 gigabyte, 120-minute DVD. For 100 to 500 of these, they're 50 cents a piece. That means you're spending between $50 to $250. If you were to get cases, 100 cases is between $20 and $25 if you get the super thin ones. Also, I recommend the thin ones. When people buy DVDs, they are thinking about the space that that DVD will take up on their shelf. The thinner it is, the better. But also, if you're just going to have a sleeve, it's one of those like, are they getting a product or are they just getting content?
Gotcha.
So I recommend a larger case, but getting the super thin ones. And those are about $20 for 100. So inserts and cover art. Do I recommend doing this yourself? Absolutely. If you do it yourself, it's really cheap. You're looking at 30 cents to a dollar per printout per DVD or less. Like really, this is color printing. It's on gloss paper. You get it on a thick stock and you get one of those inserts too with whatever data, whatever information, whatever your website is, whatever other things.
Right, whatever they need. Yeah.
Whatever the content is, table of contents, doesn't matter. That is a game changer. Having an insert increases the apparent value of the product. It's one of those psychological triggers. So total DVD production on the cheapest end looks at $2 to $4 per DVD. That's $200 to $400 buy-in cost. Once you have your video, once you have your video produced, you're looking at $200 to $400 to get your DVDs in hand produced stack of 100. That's awesome. With a 10 to 20 times markup, plus above, you could go higher than that. That's insane. So you're looking at all that, and there are cheaper options. If you bought the DVDs and burned them yourself, you're looking at $120 for 100 self-burnt DVDs. Do I recommend that? No, it's time-consuming.
Yeah,
time-consuming, and it eats up all of your computer's processing power, which means that whatever your computer is doing, that's downtime for whatever work
that
you normally do.
We should do that.
However, there is an even cheaper option. Amazon S3, Simple Storage Services. This I looked this up. This is actually about what it costs to serve and store DVDs. It's 12 cents per month to store it and 18 cents to serve it. So for that 100 DVD service, if you're selling those within 18 months, you're looking at like $180 or $18. $18 compared with 200.
And that's to deliver a digital download?
To deliver a digital download.
Yeah. So you're saying this is not to...
No, this isn't back of room sales unless you get those printouts that has the download code. But again, it's like, it's $200 for a DVD and it's the value perception is so much higher.
Way bigger able to leave with something. Yeah.
To me, selling a DVD, I've seen a lot more really interesting content. So we're getting to the end of this whole thing.
Thanks for sticking with this so far. This is beyond the minimal setup.
So right now,
they're not seeing this.
You can get
that's
as
what we were looking
far
at.
into the crazy setup as you want. Like, this guy is on a Segway. He's got monitors. He's got sound. He's got teleprompter.
Clearly, he's let his hobby get out of hand.
It's kind of ridiculous. I mean, things go in the tripod for $13,000.
Yep.
Right there. And actually,
I have one somewhere.
Somewhere back in my other house with my other life. But this is
I do have this on wheels, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, so that's what I'm going to talk about in a second. Oh. So right here, you can
show them this.
You could use one of these. This is an $8 tripod. I would not trust this thing to hold a $1,000 camera.
Right,
I would not. $20 tripod. Now we're talking. Okay, cool. Now we get a little bit of stability there, and then eventually you can upgrade into one of these, which is perhaps actually exactly the one that you have there.
Yeah. And this this thing's on wheels.
It's on wheels, which means that you can roll it around, get those smooth shots and everything.
Yeah, this is...
if you want. But really, you don't need any of this stuff. You don't even need a tripod. You can just set your camera on a stack of books. Like, really, there is a cheaper way to do everything that is more elegant, easier with whatever you already have. Mm-hmm. So... there's a million that you can get. You can spend as much money and time on this stuff as you want, or you can
get. I want to jump in with a quick thing. We were filming in downtown Minneapolis at a TV station, and we were in the Paul Douglas's backyard. It was a live news thing, and they were trying to get the angle on the camera right. And the cameraman went over, and he took a couple of cigarette butts, folded them in half, stuck them under the camera to prop it up.
Yeah,
this is $100,000 camera, you know, for live news. That's and great. I said, man, I thought it would be a little more technical than that. And the guy said, nope.
That guy, you'd be good friends with that guy.
Oh yeah, I'd love to have coffee with that guy.
Well, it's like when you go to get to a dentist, and you're paying a lot of money. You got to get teeth extracted. They have chisels and hammers.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. It's
you're like, really? That's the tools we're going with?
I mean, but that's the thing is, it's you can get away with that stuff, and because when you're there, you're awake and present with the people chiseling on you. Even though it would work, don't do it. But that's the thing is,
love it, yeah.
In a camera, you're only seeing what's on camera. So it doesn't matter what you do off camera. It doesn't matter if there's cigarette butts or, you know.
It's great. It works perfectly.
Which is great. So here's some resources for you if you want to learn any more of this stuff. As far as YouTube channels, one I recommend is Film Riot if you want to get into any of the technical stuff or any specific techniques. Mm. I have seen them cover everything from the most complicated shots using robotic arms to do time freezing stuff to just like, how do you do a car chase scene without a budget and without breaking the law?
Wow.
How do you hold a camera so that it looks nice? How do you frame a shot? Just like really basic to like super technical. And they do really awesome stuff. To rent camera equipment, borrowlenses.com. I highly recommend them. I've had nothing but good service and really, really understanding people with them.
Awesome.
DVD printing and all of the DVD services, blankmediaprinting.com. They are the cheapest prices with the highest quality that I have found. And then there's me, Nick Fedoroff. You can find me on Facebook and Showbiz Blueprint, all that stuff. Ask me any questions. I am more than willing to engage you on a personal level, like just really, yeah.
Dude, that's awesome.
Yeah,
that
and
great.
Then just for you, here is the
teleprompter.
Wait, hold on. What's going on there? Yeah, there we are.
Yep.
So this is the basic teleprompter. So right here you have your screen down here. That's your phone. In a mirror image setup, there's free apps to do that.
Yep.
You have your piece of glass. Make sure that it's covered in darkness. For me, this was a cardboard box. And then over here is your camera. For me, this camera was actually inside the cardboard box.
Yeah.
And then this just reflects up there. You can look directly at the camera without, and read without breaking eye contact with people. Like even now, I'm not looking directly at the camera. I'm looking slightly off. This is where the screen is. This is where this is.
But your psychologically, glasses fool it.
Right, the glasses.
Yeah, so that's that's not my teleprompter setup. But yeah, I have one that sits on the tripod, and I just set an iPad right in there, and it's ready to go. And I use teleprompter a lot. I love teleprompters because, well, if you're doing a specific sales message, there are points you want to hit. There's a time limit. You don't want to have any ahs or ums. You just want to keep going.
And it has to just be as quick and as succinct as possible. And I just did this shot for, I'm doing a performing arts center tour and I needed this video to be perfect.
Yeah.
And I didn't have a lot of time to get it done because I was literally getting requests from people. And I'm like, I have to get this perfect. I'm just going to write the script, put in my teleprompter, shoot it, and be done. And it, I did it in under half an hour. Under half an hour for setup, lighting, filming, everything. Like it was beautiful. Beautiful to just have that streamline.
And a second one, Jesse was asking about teleprompters, and maybe it's of interest to other people, but there's a little ear prompter, which I love and live on, and I've done, you guys have seen them. I've done them for Showbiz Blueprint. I do them for Sugar Free, but if I have a script I want to deliver, I have a little tiny wireless earbud, and I follow my own voice from a recorder in my pocket by about half a second. I just follow my own voice, and love those things.
Life hacking to the max.
Yeah. I actually delivered, and this is terrible, but I was at a big event, and I did a speech in front of a ton of people. A fairly poetic thing, and it was supposed to be memorized, and I did not have time or desire to memorize, or probably the brain cells, and I used this thing, and everyone was like, how'd you do that so well? No one said it like that. No, I didn't tell anyone. I just said, you know, I hack things away.
Yeah, that's great.
But yeah, the ear prompter is invisible, so it's a wonderful little device too. So.
And I would never use one of those. No. Take it out of my ear now. Yeah.
All right. You guys, thank you. An invitation again to bring your own masterclass to the Showbiz Blueprint community. It is amazing. Who's that with a little kid up there at the top? I don't see. I'm too far away from the monitor, but someone has a little baby. Okay. That is phenomenal. Wait, I got to go see who that is.
Yeah.
I'm such a sucker for kids. Oh, my God, Jesse, it's your baby. That's awesome.
That's my baby. There it is.
That's so cool, man. I love it. So, yeah, if you have something you're expert on, I mean, Nick wanted to talk about film production, and I so love what we did here today. It's mind-opening for me. It always gives me new ideas. You have something else you want to talk about that our community would be interested in? I would love to host it. We have technology to do it remote.
Yeah, and if anybody has any questions, like right now, that I can answer if you have anything. I don't
definitely
know.
Open up the floor to this, too. If we're,
let
me check the chat, too.
Yeah, if there's any...
While we're waiting, I just want to say thanks, Nick. It was truly eye-opening. And,
oh, good. I'm glad that you got some...
incredible. I lost my focus a little bit after the body painting, but I got back.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, I should find that photo. That's I actually can, while Barry's looking this whole thing up, just so I can show you sort of the quality that...
Jesse had mentioned a website in the notes here. I'll post that. Has DVD. Production possibilities, very low prices, under $2 each, no minimum purchase.
Right.
Yeah, there's all kinds of ways. You know, I've sold tens of thousands of my book, I Love Me More Than Sugar, through Amazon Print On Demand. It's a different world, and I've never held any of those books. And they send them out, and all they do is send me $4.11 for every book I sell. So, oh my gosh, let me take that close to the lens.
Let me make it a little bit bigger. There you go.
That's your girlfriend at the end of the rain scene?
Yeah.
See if we can get this to focus, right? Come on.
That's one of the final.
Yeah, focus.
It'll focus, right?
Focus.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's with all the paint finally dripping down her after they were.
You guys did this 3 a.m. in San Francisco?
In Oakland.
Oakland. Wow.
Yeah. It was like literally cars are driving 1 foot away from her, splashing water onto her. It was great.
And we just lost Mark again, but still.
That's fine. He'll be able to see it in the replay.
No, but I frankly, I just love your just do it message. And
yeah, and that's the thing is, I don't know about you, but I've lost so much time procrastinating. Like the reason that I say it is because the breakthroughs that I've had have been when I just sort of look at myself in the mirror, figuratively or literally, and say, "What are you really stopping for? Like, why don't you just do this? You can fix it later." So there's actually something that was brought up to me. It's called extreme programming. I don't know if anybody's familiar with this concept. But in programming, they have this whole idea of like, oh, we're going to do this. We have like 100 features that we're going to program into this thing.
Yeah.
Well, if you program all 100 features, most definitely your project will lose funding about 1/10 of the way through.
Oh.
So, what they say extreme programming is let's say that you want to do 100 things. Okay, you start with one. You do one, you get that one working. Even if you 100% know that you have to throw out all of that work to get to the second one or to get to the 10th one or to finish it up, you're going to have to redo all that work. The reason is because you have progress made. Even if you have to go back later, you will have learned the lessons and you will be able to approach it from a completely different perspective. For instance, Google. Google started out as a search engine. Now look at them. They did not say, I'm going to build an empire and we're going to do this thing. And we're going to do that. They said, we're going to make a search engine that's good. Yep. Great. Best cool. They made it. It was awesome. Yeah. Then they said, okay, we're gonna include this feature. And now this feature. And now we're gonna Android and all this stuff. And now they are unstoppably brilliant and huge.
Yeah.
So that's sort of the thing is just start and just do it.
Tui, who's probably on this scenes of making a new promo reel. You know, this is a good time.
Okay, so
do you recommend 24 or 60 frames per second for show footage?
Show footage, I recommend 24 frames per second simply because it gives you more fine-tuning with the lighting. The one thing that I really would recommend is aiming on the darker end of your exposure. Your frames per second aren't as important when doing something like that. Technically, you could shoot in either. What matters at that point is what you're publishing in is 24 frames per second. But if you're shooting in 30, you can't scale down to 24. So you could shoot in either. But the issues that I typically see for when people are trying to do demo footage, especially with stage shows, and I'm not sure if...
Juggling, cool.
So with stage shows, the lighting will blow out your skin. It will blow out your clothing. And you want to wear something that will, you don't want to wear it 100% black and then white underneath. It will give you too high of contrast. So wear like off black or off white or some sort of color in between. I don't know what your
wardrobe is. I can loan this shirt too.
Yeah, exactly. So, and what that'll do is it'll make sure that you get your skin tone with the lighting tested ahead of time. That's where you're going to fail. Not so much on frame rate, but publish in 24 frames per second. Whether you shoot it in 60 or 24 just matters for what you want to do with it afterwards. If you want to do slow-mo, shoot it in 60.
Yeah.
If at any point you want to show a highly skilled maneuver slowly,
you should see what he
just
does.
Shoot it in 60 all the way through.
Yeah,
that's my recommendation for you particularly. For me, the stuff that I'm doing is mostly verbal. It's you know, there's a little bit of physical stuff. But it's mostly verbal, and I shoot my stuff in 24. So
I have a question then.
Yep.
So if everything that I've currently got is shot in 30 frames per second, because no one ever told me otherwise until today, and I'm trying to then shoot new stuff that I'm gonna, you know, and I might need to work out with some of the old stuff. I don't have enough new stuff.
Right.
How does that?
So 30 frames per second is not a deal breaker. It's definitely not a deal breaker. I mean, but I would just make sure that you're publishing 30 frames per second or interpreting that footage as, or no, not interpreting, publishing that and exporting that and rendering it in 24 frames per second
so that
they will get that. It's
right.
It's still.
And that rendering is something you can do on the output. Even if you shot at 30, you can render
absolutely
when you export it.
Whatever you're exporting your stuff in. I don't know. What kind of editing software do you use?
Oh,
that's him. That's great. That's
awesome. He's showing to it.
iMovie, you said? I'm sorry.
I have Final Cut.
Pro. Oh, Final Cut. Okay, cool. Yeah, that's just a setting in your output in Final Cut. So just in your render settings, that's just switch it to 24 frames per second. And also H.264 is the codec that you're going to want to use.
I think that's what I've always, yeah.
So it's an MP4, I think.
Yeah, that's MP4,
Yeah, that's what you want
to use. Watch this trick when it peaks.
H.264.
I'm going to watch this when it peaks. See, something's clearly not right with this guy. It's
awesome. I love this.
I know. No, it gets pretty crazy, actually. It's
So yeah, 30 frames per second footage is not, like I had a bunch of 30 frames per second footage that... Again, like this is a continuous process. Either I didn't put the camera on the right setting or somebody else filmed it for me and didn't know. But it's not a deal breaker. Just use it, make it good, look as good as possible and export in 24 frames.
What about this in slow?
And then shoot whatever else in 24. Yeah, that's great. Getting that in slow motion, that'd be amazing. Yeah.
You got another ring on the leg these days.
What?
There's another ring on the leg these days, on the upper leg.
Awesome.
Oh. Right, yeah, why just have those?
Right. Awesome. I mean, you'd have to, right?
Sure, I mean, it only makes sense. Oh, man, that's so great.
That's DVD production possibilities. Oh, that's great. Cool.
Well, cool. Awesome. All right, you guys. Well, this has been Nick, the magician, and the magician is in. .com, right?
TheMagicianIsIn.com.
You have another website you were saying you just finished up some.
Oh, yeah. If you go to TheMagicianIsIn.com/stage, that's the thing that I literally finished less than 24 hours ago.
That's what you're playing with.
That is, that's my demo's been, it's like 6 years old. it's ridiculous.
Yeah. You're working in other fun video projects, I know.
It's good. It's really interesting.
Good. And Nick's a great example of building a business, a successful business through relationship marketing, man. He's 27, exactly a little under half my age.
That's true.
And is unbelievable just to see what you've done. And I know you did Showbiz Blueprint a few years ago. And, mm-hmm. and just, yeah, it's always
took
been
me over the top.
That's it's cool. always been cool to watch you dig in.
Thank
so,
you.
Guys, thank you so much. This one, I think we hit 2 hours on. Great masterclass.
Hey.
drop a line when you want to jump in on one. We're always looking to plan them ahead. So I will sign off and say goodbye. Nick will take it home while I go over to the production.
Thanks, gentlemen.
Thank you, guys.
I hope all of you enjoy your video projects and that we connect outside of this particular interaction again.
Thank you. We look forward to the editing class next week.
Oh, yeah, totally.
We probably could dig into some of that.
You know, why not? You know?
Yeah.
But technically, I may just put something together and put it up there anyways.
Cool, you guys. Take care. Have a good day.
Bye. Bye-bye. Thanks.